Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live at richarddugan.com. We're also archived at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We are rebroadcast on A-Z.fm. Check their listings for the time and day so that you can listen to this again or, again, go to the archives page. Again, we are streaming live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, and we encourage you to check out our hosts, our guests' website. You're already at the host website if you've gone to richarddugan.com. And check out what our guests have to offer. It's a smorgasbord. We set the plate, set the table. Fine china, gold-plated silverware, and fine crystal. It's up to you as to what it is that you wish to partake in. And if it resonates with you, take it. And it's kind of like a hologram. I remember in school, we saw a film in regards to how they made holograms, and they did this, in this case, on a large piece of glass. And, of course, you could see the hologram. You turn the glass in different positions, and you saw sort of a 3D type of image. Then they broke the glass, and that image of, in this case, I think it was a building, was on every single piece of glass, large and small. So in this case, when you take a little bit from the table, it's still there, which is kind of neat. And so we encourage you to do just that. Today's program is going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be fun because we're going to make it so. I'm going to say that the first time that I ever did a program on this subject, I was working for as you've heard many, many times, a Christian radio station. And the interesting aspect of it was that I was interviewing a couple, as I will be doing today. They happen to be Mennonites. I don't know what the spiritual religious orientation of our guests is. We'll find out. Not that it's relevant, but nonetheless, the couple that I was interviewing were a pair of Mennonites. And they had written a book. I was flabbergasted, what little I know about the Mennonite religion. We were talking about, as we will be today, sex. That's right. We're going to be talking. We're having the talk. So if you never had the talk before, you're going to get the talk today. And we have a couple who are joining us here via the phone lines. And we're going to be talking with the authors, I think, of a very important work, Sexual Enlightenment, which is interesting. How to Create Lasting Fulfillment in Life, Love, and Intimacy. And I am very excited to have them on the program. And we have with us Elsbeth Muth, and we also have Freddie Zental Weaver. And I want to welcome both of you to the program.
Hi, Richard.
Yes, thank you so much.
This is certainly a topic and an area that, of three topics, you don't talk about at the dinner table, and the other two are religion and politics. And there is certainly a great deal of religion when we start talking about our own sexuality and what sex is and isn't. Just talk to Bill Clinton. And and there's also a great deal of politics, too, because there's always that grappling for, I guess, control. There's the issues of control and power and so on and so forth, which we're going to talk about, but maybe talk in the context of demystification, if you will, breaking that fourth wall, as they say in theater. But you folks also have a website, which I like the title of it, Tantra Nova. TantraNova.com, yeah, is the website. It made me think of that television program that was short-lived called Terra Nova. Going back 65 million years into the past and starting over. And I thought, you're a bunch of cowards. You're not even willing to stay in the present day and work on your problems. And we can't go back to the past in this instance. We're here, we're now, and we need to deal with the issue at hand, and that's our own sexuality. How did the two of you begin this journey? And I'll have you start.
Wonderful. Thank you, Richard. So we met in 2001 on the internet, and that happened at a time when I had gotten clear that I wanted to create a fulfilling relationship instead of falling into one, which I had done frequently in my earlier life and which produced a lot of suffering and, you know, dissatisfaction and misunderstandings and frequently attracted to unavailable men. And so I had done some work within myself, and part of that was exploring and tapping deeper into my own sexual spiritual being through the practice of Tantra and Taoism, both, you know, ancient traditions from the East, Tantra from East India and Taoism from China. And then I was ready. I put my profile out on a dating site, and voila, Freddy Santal showed up. And I got very intrigued because he wrote me in one of his first emails that he had grown up in a tantric household. So, darling, perhaps you may want to take it from here.
Oh, right. Yeah. Hi, Richard. Yeah, this is Freddy Santal. So, I was in software business. The company had hired me, moved me to Chicago 13 years ago. And really, I was in search of something different from what I had been doing for the last 20 years in the software business and the marketing side of that. That would allow me more inspiration and more authentic expression of who I am. Well, I really came here to meet Elsbeth, and I met her on a dating site, and she was on her own tantric journey, and we immediately created this work, Tantra Nova Institute. And over the last 13 years, we've worked with thousands of couples and individuals all over the world now, teaching them how to draw in a new and old way, if you will, on this life force of sexual energy, which is primordial to all of us. I mean, without it, we wouldn't be here. And we have loved our life, and for me, this work has been an expression of all the jobs and things I loved and jobs that I've done. So it's all in one now.
Well, now, the word Tantra, because I remember I was involved in some programs in the late 90s into 2001, 2003, 2004, 2005, is a big buzzword, just like the word quantum. Everybody threw quantum in front of everything. And, you know, I was waiting for quantum, tantra, sexuality, and all of that.
Well, it's probably good now that you've said it. It's out there now.
It's out there now. What have I done? But the thing that I learned very early on was that this was not, and it's interesting the way that this was phrased to me, that tantra, when you're speaking about tantra sex or sexuality, is not about, and this is sort of a crude way of putting it, it's not exclusively about friction sex.
Right.
That was the term that was used.
Right, right. It's really ultimately about transcending the unconsciousness we have and the one vision we have or experience we have of our sexual selves, which is usually lusting, you know, selfish love, or mutual gratification, which, and I'm not making any of this wrong,
right?
Or, you know, procreation to create life, and, you know, the development of contraceptives to recreate. What we're advocating and teaching is how to co-create with this intelligent energy. It was creating life before any of us as thinking Homo sapiens were aware of our own existence. And there's an intelligence. If you think of that energy as creative, it creates life and pleasurable, and creativity and pleasure can show up more consistently in life and does as we bring consciousness to this life force of sexual energy. That's what we found in our own lives and with, you know, again, thousands of couples and individuals we've been working with over the decade.
It has been said to me that in addition to what you said at the front of the program about how without sex, none of us would be here, and that's in the very literal context, but that civilization as we know it would not exist without the sexual energy because it is a creative energy.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You hit it on the nail. So, and it's something we actually don't learn about in school
or
college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that this is the driving, that is the driving force and energy that has brought us into this world and that also sustains us. And Freddie alluded to it when he spoke about bringing consciousness to that energy. And what we mean by that is that there are two dimensions as we distinguish them in regarding this energy. One is the dimension that we are all familiar with, which is wired into us. Just like animals, you know, we humans are animals too, as far as our wiring is concerned biologically. So if we look at a bull and a cow, you know, when mating season comes along, they are in heat and then they go through the process, and when it's over, it's over. The bull doesn't turn back to the cow and says after that, wow, that was a phenomenally great sex. You know, it's not. However, we as human beings, we are self-reflective of our bodies, our emotions, what happens around us. We have that capacity that goes beyond the biological wiring, and that capacity we can bring to that phenomenal life force energy that has brought us forth and that sustains us and that runs through us all the time, even right now while we are sitting here and listening to the show or speaking on the show or asking questions on the show. So that energy is running through us, but we mostly we are not aware of it. So what we are bringing is that we can bring awareness to that energy, and whenever we bring awareness to something, we can do something with it. We can channel it. We can imbue our body with that wonderful energy for health reasons, you know, expand our emotional well-being, and bring that energy to fuel our wishes, desires, and intentions.
You know, it does seem as though our conversation here on the program today goes far beyond that which we may have had limited as it might have been in school, as well as maybe with our parents, in terms of speaking more in terms of relationships. Whereas what I'm hearing us talk about today, yes, it does deal with relationships, but it goes far beyond that. As far as here we are in 2014, and there are people who are talking about this incredible transitional period that we are in. This year, supposedly, and this is what I'm gleaning from many of my guests this year, they're unbelievably optimistic about this year in particular, that I don't know what it is that they expect to happen. There's not something cataclysmic, but just that there's going to be a series of just supercharged periods of time throughout this year that are going to allow us to move forward, to do things that maybe we didn't do before, that we maybe were afraid to do.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like that's where this energy comes in, and where we are going to be more enlightened, using the title of your book, more sexually enlightened. And Freddie, I have to throw this at you, as both of us being guys. Wasn't there at the very beginning of all of this, at the turn of the century? Boy, that makes me sound really old. Where you, as a guy, saying, "Oh man, this is going to be neat." You know, I mean, sex, and we're going to have fun, and this is going to be great. I mean, the very ego-centered, maybe self-focused concepts. Did any of that run through your mind, or were you already in the mindset spiritually that, no, this is the next step in my evolution and in my path?
Well, you know, Richard, I was introduced to this path early in life as a 15-year-old kid going through my puberty. My father, who is a psychiatrist, gave me a book to read on sex consciousness, and I love the idea of, you know, channeling my life force or sexual energy and circulating my orgasmic energy. And I did that through high school and through college. I was an athlete on scholarship. And then after college, I continued to read and do workshops and never thought I would teach this. But I always had a sense of the integration of the masculine-feminine dynamic, you know, grounded in my masculine, but also open to emotion, you know, which so many of us guys are, you know, taught and socialized to just hold it together, man. You know, we cry and laugh after we've been killing each other on the battlefield or beating each other up on the gridiron. This does, in the experience of it, in learning the integration of the meditative or observer mind with consciousness of breath, parasympathetic breathing, and life force energy in its subtle forms and its more aroused forms, does open up new possibility and experience in terms of what's possible. in our own emotional depth and life in general. So for me, it was a natural process to have a sense of that integration. And we've seen so many guys who come to this work who are stuck and wanting more in their relationships and in their life, and they find a way to get out of their own way to open up to new possibility. And that's kind of the magic of this work. If you can, you know, the whole thing is magical. I mean, someone listens to this and they go, wow, it's a little woo-woo, but the whole thing's woo-woo when you think single-celled amoebas, multi-celled organisms, a universe that goes on for ad infinitum. I mean, really? You know? And this life, or this energy, sexual energy, was creating life, you know, before we were aware of our own, you know, existence, you know, as thinking Homo sapiens. So there's an intelligence. And what we're sharing is how to start to draw on that intelligence to bring more, in a very real-world way, creativity and pleasure into just your life. And that's what starts showing up, just in the simple process of living when you start these practices.
And Elizabeth, what about you? I was fortunate, and I say that very seriously, I was very fortunate that I grew up in a very matriarchal family. I still have four sisters and a mother, and of course my father, my brother, and I. So we were definitely outnumbered. But it was, when I look back on the entire experience, it was all good. Because I can say today that if the women took over, I'd have no problem with it. You know,
yeah.
not just from a male to female construct, but also in terms of I've seen what the men have done and accomplished. Not much.
Yeah.
Actually, let's qualify this a little bit, because I mean, lots has been produced through, you know, the patriarchal model. At the same time, also there has been for millennia blindness. And we women, we actually, you know, tolerated it. However, what I want to bring out here is that it's always the mindset or the consciousness, the prevalent consciousness of a certain time, just like, you know, the shift from a flat world to a round world was so phenomenal because it shifted the whole way of what actions we can take or not take. You know, I cannot sail around the world in a flat world. However, I can do it in a round world. So this is how I look at it, that shift from the patriarchal model, which is a hierarchical model, mm-hmm. to an horizontal model. Because if we were in matriarchy, it would be the same as in patriarchy, just upside down.
Sure.
The model would still be vertical. One is up and one is down. Now, a new consciousness is rising, and what you said about 2014 is very intriguing to me, because, wow, that may be a further shift into coming more into balance or bringing that forth, or the balance of the yin-yang or feminine and masculine. We look at it as a figure eight. You know, where there's not an up and down, but a flowing with each other, dancing with each other. It's what Freddie called co-creating with each other. And in that model, which has been a great opportunity for me, as well as also a great challenge, because, you know, it's so easy to fall into, no, this is what I want. And if when he doesn't want it, he is wrong, I'm right, he doesn't understand me. So that is very much the hierarchical model.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an opportunity for all of us. And for me, I didn't grow up in an environment that was sexually open. I mean, when I was a kid, yes, we were in our body, we felt very free. However, as soon as I hit puberty, wow, that changed. At the same time, I was always sexually curious. So that is probably also what brought me then to the tantric practice.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I had a great transformation and very different from Freddie. You know, I would have wished having had a father who gave me a book on sex consciousness when I was a teenager, but that was not so. However, now we really dance together here in our relationship and sharing this with people around the world.
Well, I think it's extraordinary what you and others are doing to raise that consciousness and help people to reach new heights, if you will. And we're going to continue talking about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. And we are talking about sexual enlightenment, how to create lasting fulfillment in life, love, and intimacy. And we're talking, of course, with the authors, Elsbeth Muth, and we're talking with Freddie Zental, and we're going to continue talking here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Understanding where in the world we came from and where we're going is part of what this program is all about and why we're here. We know how we got here in a very rudimentary sense, but where do we want to go from here? And I think that maybe that's maybe the next series of questions that we're going to talk with Elsbeth and Freddie about here as we talk about sexual enlightenment. It's a subject that And I guess as time has gone on, and Elsbeth and Freddie, I have been doing this program, this particular program, since 2007. And, you know, usually I would come out with these questions about, well, you know, the general consensus is, the thoughts are, the feelings are of the majority of people. And what I'm finding now, some 7, 8, 9 years later, is that the majority, and maybe it isn't the majority, but maybe it's just the folks I'm hanging around with, they're not there anymore. They're not in that mindset. They have shifted into this higher consciousness, if you will. At least that's what their intent is. They're really working hard. And they have shifted out of, even though they may still live their lives, you know, they go to work 9 to 5 and they have babies and so on and so forth. And they enjoy vacations and all of these different things. And sometimes, you know, gathering up stuff, you know, it's kind of hard habit to break, but we're all kind of learning and growing and, you know, again, evolving and moving forward.
Yes.
And then I'm finding that those questions are not really relevant anymore because more and more people are saying, I've had enough of the old ways. I want something not just new. I want something that's more fulfilling.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that it's found in the stillness, in the nothingness, you know. It's like no mind, and then there is peace, you know, hankering after one more flat-screen TV or another better vacation or a job that pays more money. And as we've grown older and we've gotten those things and we realize there's still something more, something missing, and, you know, in this country there's a huge explosion with yoga, lots of people doing yoga, hatha yoga, because you do have to tune into your breath. And it does produce serotonin and, you know, the usual exercise benefits, but it requires a meditative consciousness with breath. And people are starting to slow down a little bit, which is a wonderful thing because, you know, in America we've got so much available to us. It's not like we're sitting out in the middle of a field with nothing to do. There's so many things to keep you busy and occupied that you get overwhelmed, and that's the high blood pressure, that's the dissatisfaction with not enough and wanting something more, and just in the stillness. And so this sexual energy is a new way to tap into something that is available to us in, again, subtle and aroused forms, which has typically had sort of a one-dimensional view. I mean, I can't think of anything more spiritual than creating new life, but yet this energy is so vilified in our society and in the world over the millennia. You know, it's for most people enshrouded in shame and fear and guilt and unconsciousness. And what we're teaching, you know, we could teach to nuns and priests if you were vowed to celibacy. Mm-hmm. It would bring a new awareness of this energy that can shift how we experience and how we participate in the world. And that's really what happens with bringing consciousness to this life force energy.
I have to say that my mother was doing hatha yoga before hatha yoga was cool. She would watch the public television programs, and this was like the late 60s into the 70s, and every morning, you know, like clockwork, there she was, and she was doing this. And I also have thanked her on many occasions for doing everything that she could to get us started out right nutritionally as well. You know, she would make, for example, her own version of eggnog, which was awesome, just unbelievable. It was non-alcoholic, but it was natural, and it was very good, and granola, and a lot of these other things, and always tried to feed us a good meal. I would say that that if she served us pizza, she made it. she didn't go out and buy it. It was a very rare occasion that they would go out and buy fast food, you know, that type of thing. We even had meals around the table where my dad was literally, he was making for eight people in the household, he was making waffles one by one. And pancakes and things of this nature. So I would have to say that my folks were on the, so to speak, on the cutting edge before the edge was even there. You know, and they weren't of the of the 60s hippie movement. I mean, I was born in 1960. My God. You know, they were both out of the 30s and 40s, if you will, dynamic, if you will, or paradigm.
Yes.
And yet they both have grown to such an extent. My father will be, my father is 83 this year, and my mother, I believe, is either 79 or 80, and they're still going strong. Spoke with them just the other day. They're having a great time. Health is good. You know, I mean, kind of like the usual conditions that one has in those time frames. You know, dealing with a little high blood pressure here and a little joint pain there, but they're out there exercising, they're out there traveling, they're out there enjoying their lives and their great-granddaughter. I have to say that excites me more than anything else, the fact that there are now four generations once again alive in our family, and that my parents, kind of weird to even think about, are great-grandparents.
People are living longer.
Absolutely.
Which is why it's important for us to find more happiness and joy in every moment we have. You know, people are living longer, and it's a time in history when if we don't wake up, we could destroy the whole thing. You know, it's a time when science and spirituality are saying the same thing, that we are one, you know, with,
yeah,
with Higgs boson and string theory and so on. So there's a real consciousness awakening, and with the information dissemination highway, the internet, the critical mass to consciousness can disseminate a lot quicker. You know, people can really learn a lot quicker. People are hearing more and more about what we're doing because of the internet and
yeah,
so on. And there's a lot of things going on in the world that don't take so long to propagate or get out.
In addition, I'd heard something not too long ago, a documentary. They were talking about the past and civilizations, peoples of the past. And they said that they had been able to isolate an element within the oxygen molecule, the oxygen that we breathe.
Yes.
That shows just how connected we are, not just in the present day, but how connected we are to the people of the past. This element that they found, they were actually able to do the equivalent of carbon dating.
Yes.
And they said that it is possible that you listening right now, or even the three of us here, as we inhale the oxygen, we could actually be breathing in the actual oxygen molecules that Adam, Moses, Jesus breathed in their day. Now, you want to talk about how that blew my mind?
Yeah. Well, think about how vilified the sexual energy is, and that it is intelligent enough to create life.
Yes.
It is an element that shows up everywhere in life.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do, again, these practices that we're teaching, that element of creativity and pleasure start to shift even the thinking, which is a very practical application when you think of, okay, well, I hate my job, but what am I going to do 30 more years through retirement? And we start bringing consciousness to creativity and pleasure, where either we shift that conversation, which changes the energy and how we feel, or we create work that's more fulfilling or happy, just as one example of areas in life that start to shift everywhere.
Yeah, and how that is related to the molecule you just mentioned, Richard. Because it's like that subtle energy, and oxygen is a form of energy. Air is has, you know, a certain frequency, and energy never goes away. It's ever present. It
yeah,
just shows up in different manifestations. And that, I think, what you're alluding to with this molecule is that, in that sense, you know, the frequencies stay around. So this is why we may breathe in what was breathed before.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the same way, what we are supporting people in is to tune with their frequency, both for their own sake, like the relationship with self, as well as then also with another. And for that, we really need to drop out of our head, because the head often keeps us, you know, in a monotonous, stagnant place, and then breathing into our belly, breathing into our heart center, and from there connecting with our beloved's heart center, or it could be a child, you know. These practices are not just for beloveds. They are for any relationship. Of course, it may show up a little differently depending on the quality of relationship.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to, because I do want to talk about some of these practices, but the thought comes to mind about our current social structure on a gender level, if you will. And I don't know whether this is something that's new because of the consciousness that is rising, or if this is something very old and that we're going to shift from it too. And I'd like to kind of get your perspective on this. There are people who are struggling with their, not just with their sexuality, but even with their gender, and there are males who they feel female and vice versa.
Right. Well, you know, and Elspeth's got something to say on this too, but real quickly, you know, when we start out in the womb as zygotes, we're androgynous. And then it's decided we're male or female. And then as full adults, we have aspects of testosterone and estrogen in our system. And as we get older, the whole system reverses itself. Men grow breasts and women grow hair on their faces. So what we're advocating is how you can balance this masculine-feminine dynamic as it exists socially, emotionally, and, in your experience. You know, in our language, how we can, as men, grounded in the masculine, open up to being sensitive, being nurturing, and still be grounded in that strength as well. And for the woman to have the strength to be able to speak up and be strong in her feminine. So there's an integration that's happening. Now, for many, there are those who have they're in a masculine body, but they have more estrogen, or they're more feminine in their socialization and just in their psychology. And now there's a time now where in science can allow those people to become what they feel that they are, and there's an expression and an openness that allows that. So I think things are opening in a good way.
Yeah, it's not just becoming, it's really being who they are already. So living in a dualistic way of looking at ourselves as human beings is actually very limiting, because it's a continuum. It's not black and white. So, features of certain physical features of having a lingam, which is translated from Sanskrit into penis, or better, magic wand of light, or having a yoni, which is the sexual center of a woman. Yoni is translated into sacred space. Of course, we can see that these are much more endearing ways of looking at our sexual self and being with ourselves. So the opportunity now to be more open to that continuum from masculine to feminine, both energetically, just as Freddie said, you know, a man can be grounded in his masculine yet open to his feminine feeling state, or vice versa. A woman can be grounded in her feminine and open to her grounded masculine state of being. And so we just saw on CNN last night on Piers Morgan, a woman speaking. She was just phenomenal. She was born as a boy as far as her sexual body parts were concerned. However, what was most striking was when she spoke about that she always has been a woman. It was not becoming a woman. She has been a woman. It was just shifting then in this world into that, you know, physical body and through hormones. And she was most gracious, and it was so clear that being a woman has always been herself. And so we work actually with, you know, heterosexual couples, same-sex couples, transgender people, because it's all about tuning with our energy, and energy goes beyond just our physical appearance.
Mm-hmm. I remember first hearing the stories about people struggling with this issue, and it took me a while, but I finally came to the realization that, look, if these folks are not happy and fulfilled, and this is the focus of their entire existence is to make this physical shift, then let them make the physical shift so that they can get on with, you know, with their lives. Now, I would tend to think that you would probably want to assist folks. You would never certainly discourage someone from going through any procedures in this regard if this is their heart's desire. But at the same time, the male and the female are somewhat, the genders are sort of distractions from what is truly real in our lives when we start talking about the sexual energy.
Yes, also it's just, you know, what's real. You know, that depends a little bit on where I'm looking from.
True.
So it's really like in our certification program, we have a couple. One already completed the program, and the other one is completing her second level of certification this coming spring. And just watching them transforming into their being that they have chosen to be, that they always want to be, it's just phenomenal. The woman who, you know, used to be a boy, she really blossomed into this beautiful, gorgeous woman who is centered in herself, peaceful. Now, this process, and we watched her growing into that, this process really has altered her sense of being from, you know, being really struggling with her identity to now being totally, you know, resting in herself. And she has become fully a woman, very feminine, gracious, beautiful, mm-hmm. all of it, what we, you know, usually connect with being feminine.
Mm. So you had mentioned something earlier, Freddie, about this whole issue of the maleness and femaleness and men coming into more of their feminine aspect. And it isn't. I know a lot of people that I've come across over the years when they hear that phrase, you know, that guys need to get in touch with their feminine side. It's as if they've been told, this individual's been told, okay, you need to completely shift over there. But what you were saying was that you need to, it needs to come into balance.
Right. In a very practical sense, and there's particular exercises that we lead people through in our workshops, and one of them is them recognizing where they are in and out of balance in their masculine and feminine. So there's a chart that we have, and it's all designed, and we have them read masculine, feminine traits. And just as an example, so we have them put on the chart where are they in balance in their life with the masculine and the feminine. And usually people will put something down that relates to their work or something they're very familiar with and comfortable with. And balance would be like being able to listen, which would be more of a feminine, and being able to be assertive, which would be more of a masculine, which is an example. And then we we take them to another process and we have them look at where they're out of balance. And no matter where someone's coming from, if they've done this work before or not, they recognize from the languaging that we're using in terms of what's associated with feminine and what's associated with masculine, where they are in and out of balance. And then we have them look at and draw a line into the balanced opposite. So if they're out of balance masculine in, say, one part of their life where they're always aggressive and they're not listening and they're always righteous and so on, then they draw a line to the feminine where they would be more inquisitive and more supportive and more in a listening mode. They can see how that very shift in just awareness with this languaging could change the effects of what's happening in their out of balance in this particular part of their life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of where someone can be in and out of balance in the masculine and feminine, how it can be very effective to look to balance that.
Elizabeth, you had mentioned earlier also that talking about this energy, the sexual energy, and I'm curious, how is this energy, when we define it more as sexual energy. How is it different from what is being referred to today, both by science as well as by, I'll call them metaphysicians, the divine matrix or the field or that energy that binds us all together? How is it different, or what are the subtleties of the sexual energy in regards to this larger construct?
Mm-hmm. Wow, great question. So, again, energy is one, as Freddie mentioned, and it shows up in different forms. So when energy shows up within me as sexual life force energy, you know, unlike it could show up, you know, in the floor. The floor has frequency too, mm-hmm. but a different density than my life force energy. And only alive beings, including animals, plants, and of course human beings, have life force energy. Other energy is inert, in inert objects. But anyway, so that energy, that life force energy, shows up within me, in my body, in my experience, in my sense of emotions. And my body is really physically, there's a demarcation, you know. There is a demarcation between my body and the air, or between my body and Freddie Santal's body. However, energy-wise, there are frequencies between my body and the air, and between Freddie and me, of course. So there is a learning, a becoming aware of the energy that is within me. And then the energy that connects me with Freddie Santal, or that connects me with you, you know, because you and I, we are energetically connected as well. Just like my vocal cords produce a frequency that, or vibration that hits your eardrums, you know, so we are energetically connected. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to hear me.
Right. Makes sense, yes.
So what we are saying is like that frequency of sexual energy is the most understood frequency or energy there is, and that is where we bring awareness to, because it's the most powerful energy. It brings forth life. So for millennia, we have focused on our spiritual beings, either through religion or through metaphysics, spiritual practices. And it actually has become more fashionable over the last 20 years to focus on our spiritual self, and not only in a religious context necessarily, but in a human context. We have focused more also through therapy, through transformational programs, over the last 20, 30 years on our emotional energy, you know, how we feel, anger, love, joy, sadness, you know, and explore that further. How we look at sexual energy is that the time has come, like the last frontier, to open up to our whole being. Because unless we clear whatever construct, whatever constriction there may be around our life force energy, as Freddie Santal said, fear, guilt, shame, embarrassment, all of that, you know, is connected with that energy, like collectively. It's not just an individual thing in that, too. So when we clear that, our energy, life force energy, can flow more freely and imbue our emotional being and our spiritual being. In that sense, reintegrating our earthly with our heavenly being, or our sexual with our spiritual being.
This conversation is, I think, extremely important for all of us to take in, because, you know, the energy that we are made up of, that allows us to function and do the things that we do, and be who we are, it's there. I mean, it's here. It's yep. here. It's there. It's everywhere. And for us to begin the process of relating to each other and to this energy in that way, just you, if I'm understanding correctly, if we begin that process of relating in that fashion, a lot of the struggles and the strife and the stresses and challenges in our lives become almost a moot point to our existence. I'm not saying they go away, but they don't take over and control our lives anymore.
Exactly. That's what we found is, you know, stuff doesn't stop coming up. It just doesn't stick around as long.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes these conversations can be so heady and esoteric and sort of going on, and yet there's a very, very practical application to this, and we outline that in our book, Sexual Enlightenment, really practices that you can do on an everyday, real-world base regularity, and shift the way that you communicate with your children, the way that you work with your spouse, the way that you move into your authentic contribution to your life and the rest of the world and how that looks. I mean, if I said, well, you know, I don't want to talk to anybody, I don't feel like teaching anything, I just want to garden. I just love gardening, right? If I would garden with such enthusiasm that someone would pass by my flowers and be inspired. So when we tune into intimacy, into me I see, and start coming from that place, we contribute to the whole. And that's really where the shift starts to happen, as you do these practices that bring more familiarity and accessibility to this intimacy. Then we start coming from that place as opposed to a lot of, again, the rationalized, you know, ego survival thinking that we live in. You know, it's a Machiavellian world. We're relatively new to this conscious thinking, you know, over the, you know, the millennia that, you know, for the ad infinitum that the universe has been around, we're pretty new to our consciousness and awareness. So we are evolving, and I feel the glass is half full, and this is part of the path.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I'm curious. I've got a couple of more practical questions for you and for both of you. You both can respond to this. I just I remember hearing or reading, and I'm going back maybe 15 or 20 years ago, and I was going through sexual practices have always been interesting to me. Programs dealing with sex and sexuality have always intrigued me because of the energetic. But I had read something about specifically for the males about the prostate. And my father, he just went through a process. I mean, there are guys in their 70s and 80s. They're going through, you know, prostate cancer issues, and they get the radiation or whatever it is, and it goes away, and they're never bothered again. And I had heard that as long as a man continues to use the prostate, if you will, I use that in a very general term there, that the risk of them contracting, let's say, a prostate problem or cancer is actually minimized. And of course, what I'm speaking about, and I can use these terms on the radio because it's okay, if a man, even if he has no partner, continues to have an ejaculation, which is, from what I understand, it's the semen comes from the prostate. And again, I don't know. I'm not a biologist, and I didn't do well in biology. That as long as you continue to keep the flow going, that's where the problem is. The flow stops. When men reach a certain age, they stop, quote unquote, using the prostate.
Let me add to this. So please. Actually, the semen is actually on it's in these little sacks on the testes.
Okay.
And it's from there that the prostate helps the ejaculation by pulling up. It's a gland. And it's equivalent to the female Grafenberg gland, or what we, in our parlance with Tantra Nova, call it the G-spot or the sacred spot.
Right.
So if you were a woman, then, if a man were a woman, then the prostate would be the Grafenberg spot, and the testes would be the ovaries, and the whole thing reverses itself as a man. So for the man, to continue the oxygenation and blood flow of the prostate and a healthy prostate, I've read some reports that it can be healthy in terms of keeping that blood flow and aliveness. And I've also heard and read that if you have cancer or there are cancer cells present, that it's not good to massage because it can spread those cells.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in a healthy prostate, yes, exercise, exercising it, and there's some very specific exercises that we teach that can do that very process.
I know. Go ahead.
Bringing aliveness, it's all about blood flow. if the blood flow goes down, which happens when we grow older, unless we keep moving with the body and not just exercising like running, but also exercising our pelvic floor muscles for both men and women to keep the area of the sexual center alive. As you already mentioned, Richard, it's all about flow. Now, flow can be produced through moving that ejaculate. But not only. A man doesn't necessarily have to ejaculate and still be in the flow through muscle squeezing and releasing of the pelvic floor, and most importantly, through breathing, breathing into the sexual center, into the lingam, because that allows the spongy tissues to stay like oxygenated. And so there are, again, as Freddie mentioned, very practical exercises we share in the book, Sexual Enlightenment, as well as also, along with the book, people can download practices for free through the book that will assist them, for males to work with their prostate, with their lingam, for women to keep their yoni center alive and lush and, you know, pleasing, yeah?
Yeah.
And, of course, to connect the sexual center with the heart center. It's never an isolated thing, because otherwise we are compartmentalized both physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And that is what we actually teach to forego and come to full wholeness and integration.
I would like to talk about the last dozen years that the two of you have been working with the Terra Novum, Tantra. Thanks a lot. I set myself up for that, didn't I? The Tantra Novum. By the way, tantranova.com is the website where you can find out more about the book, the practices, and even order the book, as a matter of fact. But I'm curious, over the last 12 years or so, as you've been working with people, what have you noticed in terms of the changes in people as they have evolved, become maybe more enlightened, and then they still want, you know, more out of their lives, so they come to you and so forth. But what have you noticed over the last, say, 12 years of those changes in people, the concerns that they had then versus, say, the concerns that they have today?
Well, certainly I've noticed, and it has been reported to us, that they move more quickly towards the thing that resonates with them. If they have a desire to do something or create something, it becomes more of a reality for them to allow it to manifest.
So, for example, you know, a woman came to us, she is married years ago, and she was pretty, you know, dissatisfied with her life, and was successful in her business, however, just not fulfilled. And she didn't know really why she came. At first it was like, oh, learning more sex practices, you know?
Mm-hmm.
However, what showed up was like she got in touch with her creative self and started a whole new business now. You know, she is now a yoga teacher and loves it, is happy, unlike before when she was depressed. And so... And with respect to where people are now, it's like, you know, as you know, we are in Chicago. We created this institute, Tantra Nova, in Chicago. It's the Midwest. It's not the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Very different environment. And although in the early 2000s, there was already an opening. I think if we had started this business in the 90s, I don't know if it had taken off. However, there was an opening not only towards yoga, but also to more consciousness. And particularly in the realm of the sexual, that, as I said earlier, is the last frontier to bring consciousness to and transformation, curiosity showed up. And not just, you know, watching more porn,
mm-hmm.
porn movies, or going to a gentleman's club, or all of that. It's... And not that this is, you know, has its place. However, if it's the only place where we can go to, it's a little limiting. And so where we find ourselves now is that people are coming because they want to, as you said it right in the beginning of the show, Richard, to bring more fulfillment to their lives, and seeing that their sexual self or their pleasure self or the constriction or the disconnect to their pleasure self may have something to do with it, you know, bringing more fulfillment in their into their lives, both on an individual level and then also on a relational level.
You know, it's interesting, as you shared that, the thought that came to me, I've been thinking that over the course of time that the systems, the institutions that are out there that are slowly falling apart, they're just going to eventually collapse and then will be replaced by something greater and better and so forth. And as you were sharing that, the thought occurred to me that, well, that's going to happen, but it's not going to happen because it's necessarily going to disintegrate in the decaying concept, but more because more and more people are going to check out of it. They're going to say, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to go over here and do that. And it's kind of like slowly but surely the air. And each person is like a molecule of that oxygen inside that balloon. As more people leave the balloon, more molecules leave, it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller until it just disappears.
Yeah.
And also,
go ahead.
Just waking up to what's no longer working.
Yeah.
Like sexual harassment, it's just not something that is working if we want to live as in co-creation.
Yeah.
You know? Or, like, you know, these affairs in secrecy.
That you mentioned earlier, Richard.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's not, and we are not coming from a moralistic point of view at all. It's really what's workable for creating fulfillment in life.
Yeah.
And so that is like, or, you know, what happened, we write in the book about the shift that we can observe with respect to these affairs, like Kennedy, Jack Kennedy, he had these affairs in the White House, but that was not publicized.
Yeah.
You know, it was totally in secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with Bill Clinton, it was publicized. It came out. And really, there's also, I think for me at least, what's showing up is like there's an awareness for women that is showing up to no longer tolerate the patriarchal consciousness.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, also the question why we as women have tolerated it for so long. Not to answer it now, this is because it is, but like asking the question, waking up to, no, it's not working.
Yeah.
I want to create a relationship where Freddie and I can evolve together, where he can express himself, I can express myself, where we respect each other, where we honor each other and ourselves.
And I think that there's a critical mass of shift in terms of these infidelities, if you will, or breaches of contract or trust in the public sector, in the private sector, in the entertainment sector. And these are the critical mass things that are creating the shift and really just bringing to fore the unconsciousness in an area, in the clergy. I mean, there's so many abusive things that have happened over the years, and mm-hmm. Now those things are coming out. And if people were taught how to be more healthy with their sexual energetic, and it's not necessarily, as I said earlier, about Sodom and Gomorrah, it can be, but then if you have enough of that, then what? So how can we use this energy again in a way that we can revitalize ourselves and reconnect with that intimacy and then allow ourselves to be more present with the rest of what's happening in our life and how we can be in that connected place?
I think that'll... A lot of the dysfunction that we see, as you've just described, I've observed it myself, and I come to my own conclusion that the issue isn't that these individuals are, individually unstable. It's that collectively they haven't been given permission to be sexual beings.
Now, right, you got it.
And
you
this is from
right
the very beginning. This is not. If you want to talk about the clergy, this is not about, oh, the clergy haven't been. No. He wasn't clergy when he was born into this world.
That's right.
So there was a time between birth and clergyhood, clergydom, where he was not allowed or she was not allowed, and it seems to be mostly men, to do this. And I have to say that one of the things that just drove me nuts back in the late 80s and 90s when I would be attempting to set up different relationships with different women, was how many women I came across who were broken. And I was so infuriated by the men in their lives and just men in general. I mean, I almost became a man hater because you're screwing up these women. Why are you doing this? And then I've got to come along and choose to, whether I choose to or not, pick up the pieces.
Yeah. And we all play a role in shifting that, which has, you know, been the negative. And it's, I think it's time. This is part of what our work has been about and what we love doing with this work, is that this energy, again, that was creating life before we were aware of anything, can then again, once again, save us, you know. And though it's been so vilified, and yet something that's so beautiful, creating life, and brings so much joy, you know, again, the pornography and so on. And I'm not making those things wrong, as Elspeth said. We're saying, though, that it's part of the awakening.
Yes.
Part of the awakening. It's like once you get enough cookies, then you got to eat some vegetables.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is going to happen, is people are going to discover, and this is what our work is about, how you can use this energy in a way to enhance this connectedness.
Yeah.
And even if you are vowed, again, to celibacy, or you are even in a self-love instance, you can. There's practices that we teach that you can turn masturbation into like a prayer, you know, and that becomes an opportunity to use something that's so already available to you in a new way that's going to lead you right back to that intimacy. As I said earlier, we're more open, loving, vulnerable in this energy. Chemically, we change. We can use those very dynamics to shift how we live in the very real world.
I know Elspeth spoke of this not being moralistic, but I will say I heard a wonderful definition many years ago of the word moral, or morality, if you will. And the definition was life-giving. That's morality. Life-giving. If it's life-giving, it's moral. But it is not in the context of putting it upon people. You know, forcing them. This is the way you have to live. No, that's not. I can tell you right now, forcing somebody to do something you think that they should do is not life-giving.
Yeah, it's kind of, morality is a little subjective. You know, it's
got to find another word.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Anyway, there's no judgment. It is just
exactly.
What we are about.
Exactly.
I get your feeling.
Offering an expansion, an opening, and ultimately returning to our original frequency.
This has been an extraordinary conversation, as it was for me some 25 years ago when I interviewed the Mennonites. And we really didn't delve too much into your own spirituality, but I think that through the context of this entire interview, I think we get the gist of where the two of you are coming from. And it's a wonderful space that I wish, you know, Freddie, I wish that I still feel very fortunate about my background and growing up.
Of course. Yeah.
But at the same time, I look at what I've learned in those years in my 20s and 30s, in particular, about Tantra, about the energy flow, the chi, whatever name you want to give it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, man, if we could just have more kids start out, and there are more children starting out at that point.
Yeah. Well, I must say, Richard, with your radio show, and the hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions that you reach, you're making a difference. People are hearing, and now they can just Google it on their phone, and they can learn more, and then they can buy our book, Sexual Enlightenment, available in all fine bookstores and Amazon and everywhere, and listen to your show and the people you bring on, and, you know, the information's there.
Yeah, and also just want to let your listeners know that there are free 10 practices they can get on our homepage, tantranova.com. When they opt in, they automatically, right away, get these 10 practices, and they can start practicing.
Mm. And again, the website, tantranova.com, that's the website. And Sexual Enlightenment is the title of the book. And before we wrap things up, is this your first book?
It is.
This is our first book. Oh. We have a DVD series. We've done a number of television shows and so on. And this is our first book.
Yeah, and there's also a home study course available on the homepage.
Oh, wonderful. I was just thinking in terms of this being your first book. Is it a boy or a girl?
It's androgynous. Oh, my God.
And that's okay. Freddie and Elspeth, thank you so much. This has been a joy, and I'm hoping that folks do glean something from this program, and I certainly hope they do go to Tantra Nova. com and get more information. Check out those 10 practices and check out the book. It will help, I guarantee you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dream come true. Until next time, love Talal.